Every year, millions of global travelers flock to California in search of the world's finest cannabis.
Our job is to get these travelers very high and show them a great time.
It's not always as easy as you think.
Join us, your heady hosts and cannabis tour guides,
Victor Pino
and April Black, as we spend an hour each episode trimming back the storied nuggets of life in the weed tourism game. We'll be joined by our friends, colleagues, and cannabis tourism legends from across the globe.
So get on board the weed bus, buckle up, and as always, smoke them if you got them. You're about to get high on tour with Victor Pino
and April Black.
And welcome back to another episode of High on Tour. This week, we have our good friend, Brian Box Brown, New York Times bestselling author and creator of Legalization Nation, a very, very popular cartoon, comic strip. Pardon me, it's not a cartoon, it's a comic strip that represents kind of the trials and tribulations of our cannabis industry in America today. Brian Box Brown, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. April, how you doing, friend?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. Shout out to all of our listeners this week. Happy to have you back for another one. And let's get started. Brian, if I may, I know you go by the moniker Box Brown, but we've known each other before then, right? Before the BB times, right?
Yeah. We met a very long time ago in Newark, New Jersey, at an office job, right?
Yeah, totally. We worked on, I believe, the 16th floor, right?
Yeah, possibly.
Possibly the 16th floor of a healthcare building. We were on the marketing team together, and on my first day, I got seated down next to this guy named Brian Brown, and he's supposed to teach me his job.
Yeah. Which I didn't even know what I was doing, really. Like,
oh, isn't that how it is, though? Yeah. We don't really know what the fuck we're doing.
Like, I was always, even when I was working there, like, all I wanted to do was make comics all the time. Like, I remember, like, when I was working there, just, like, thinking about how I was going to one day, like, not have to work at this job and just make comics. That's what I do now. It's kind of crazy.
No, you made it happen. You made it happen. Were you one of those kids, you made comics as little kids and like made little flip books and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. Up until a certain age, I kind of stopped. Like, I didn't really stopped in high school kind of for a while. And I stopped kind of like making art and drawing and just like checked out kind of. But then I got back into it like in my 20s and started making comics. Yeah, like, and then at some point I just became obsessed with just like just doing, that's what I wanted to do. Like, all the time. And yeah, then I like made a bunch of books, you know.
Then I made it to the New York Times bestseller list. Like, come on, Brian. All right, let me back this up. You're moving too quick, Brian. So we meet, we're work buddies on a marketing team, right? At that point, you know, 20 years ago, right? Like almost like 20 years ago, you were doing the art thing. You were kind of, I remember when I met you, you were like trying to get back into it. You're trying to pick it up as a career. I remember the day you left. Like, I remember your farewell. And you were like, you know, F this place. I'm about to do some comic work, you know, like I'm about to just draw some shit. And then a few, like not even a year later, right, you released which was your first big published piece once you left that marketing gig with me.
So the first thing I did was I received a grant to publish a book pretty quickly after I left that job, and that was called Love is a Peculiar Type of Thing, and then spent like a bunch of years self-publishing for a long time before Andre the Giant came out, and because that came out in 2015.
Yeah. 2014. But I remember that was what you were talking to me about having taken an interest in even back then. You were a big Andre the Giant fan.
Yeah. I was like obsessive, obsessively like making comics while I was working.
So that's what you did all day?
Focused mostly on that, like all the time. Like, I remember when I left there, I actually had an interview with like another company, and they were like, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years?" And I was like, "Professional cartoonist."
Like, I didn't even, yeah,
I was just like, "Not, I'm not here." It's just very funny.
That's really good. I remember also going back. So we had like we've lived concurrent lives in cannabis now, like more recently since your launch of Legalization Nation, the book, the series, right? You have multiple volumes of this comic. And tell me a little bit about the transition from best-selling, New York Times with, was it with just Andre the Giant for Tetris too, right?
Well, Tetris wasn't a New York Times bestseller, but it did sell pretty well. It was nominated for an Eisner and stuff.
Wow. Like real, that's pretty cool. Like I know this guy, Brian Brown, is acclaimed.
My book about Andy Kaufman came out a year or two later, actually won the Eisner.
I was not aware of that, but that was another one that I have proudly displayed in my collection.
Yeah. So like I was, I was making these books and stuff, and then kind of like I got backed up where like I had like two books in the can ready to come out, and I was like waiting for them to come out. And I was like getting involved with cannabis in a big way because like they had legalized. So I had been to a bunch of dispensaries all over the country, but they finally had legalized in PA, like in Philly. They were building it. They made it.
What year?
This was probably like,
not that long ago.
Like, yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Maybe like 5 years ago.
No, it was longer. It had to have been
like 2018, 2017.
Yeah, maybe it was longer. I don't know. I can't tell time really. So it was a while back. But when they first came, and I remember I was like really excited. I have dispensaries, And I remember going there and being like really excited to like buy weed, and like prices were like really high, but like I was like, I was just like taken in by the packaging and stuff, and just like I was just so pumped. And pretty soon after that, like I realized it wasn't going to be like the California dispensaries and or like Colorado or anything like that, because there's only like five companies selling weed. Like it was the most like watered down, like whack version of.
So was this? So was this?
I totally heard that about Pennsylvania. Yeah. Like just a handful, and it was totally whack.
Yeah.
And it started in February 15th, 2018. So
yeah, like
6 years.
Yeah, so that's like when I was like working on a book about cannabis, like the history of cannabis. And so like between those two things and happening, I started to get like super involved in like the whole situation, because I was like, this is so fucked up. And like, I didn't feel like I was seeing it being represented like in the media or wherever in like a real way. Like there was, the mainstream media covered it like in not like serious way. And then, like, weed media covered it in a very, like, market-centric way.
Yeah.
But, like, none of it, to me, was, like, realistic.
Yeah, and so was this kind of, like, an activist move for you? It was, like, your way of kind of, like, sticking it to the corporate cannabis man?
Yeah, like, I was, like, was talking about it a lot, right? And, like, telling everybody I could about like how fucked up this is. And I feel like I was uncovering like, some sort of like conspiracy or something like that.
I mean, to some degree, maybe, it sounds like in a lot of, you
definitely
have, right?
Some monopoly kind of shit.
Yeah,
and you've also, you've also brought light to, through the comic strip, you've brought light to some situations that have gotten notoriety for being just bad behavior, right? Like you've brought to the attention and to the mainstream through a comic, you wanted to do like a very real commentary in a very kind of artistic, creative way, but you nailed it, right?
Well, this is like my way to control. Like it's the one thing that I like know how to do, right? So like make comics, because I spent so much time doing it. And I was like, it's my one way that I can contribute to this like discussion in the best way that I can is like through comics. Like,
right.
I would like, you know,
well, it's very engaging and it really, you know, sparks the conversation. I see your comics get shared over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's cool. Like, I love that. Like, I love how people just start talking. And always like in the commentary under the comic strip, I like try to like follow what's going on, but it always like takes on a life of its own completely that I'm just like, I don't even, there's so many people having a conversation with each other in the comment section yeah. of the comic that like, I can't even keep up with it at all.
But I mean, that's success, right? Like that's a measure of your own impact.
Yeah.
With what you're doing, yeah. right? Like just the fact that like you're just overwhelmed by people's discussions around this insightful, you know, prompt that you give every week, right? Every week you drop one.
Yeah. And now we get to know what's going on like in all the states because everyone's commenting. So, you know, you get to hear about all the shitty shit going on all over.
Often, people send me stuff too all the time. So I'm like, sometimes I'm just like, I don't know what I'm going to write about. Like, what did people send me this week? And it's like all kinds of funny, weird shit going on in different places. Like someone sent me this article this week. I was just reading it today. Like some company in Maryland, like it got fined $26,000 for they like put a bunch of product in a dumpster and then like 4 days later pulled it out of the dumpster and repackaged it and sold it. And like,
oh my gosh.
So they basically dumpstered it.
So they have the whole thing on camera. So they got fined $26,000. And like in the article too, they're like, this, they resold this and they made $3,000. So it's,
oh my God.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, you made $3,000. Great. You got fined $26,000.
Yeah. And the bad press.
Yeah.
So just bad. And when they were, this company was a like an MSO, right? It was like a big company, right?
I mean, there's only kind of like big companies in Maryland. It's like the least, one of the least competitive.
That's so weird because my husband, he does the competition director for Leaf magazine. And so they're getting ready to have their Maryland Leaf Bowl. Those are their cups. And so he's like, whoa, I didn't know Beazle was out there. And like now all these people are submitting their entries and it's all these companies that I've heard of.
Yeah. I mean,
that explains it.
It's the whole East Coast rollout of legalization has been like so, like it's actually all of legalization has kind of just gotten worse over the years. If you look at like the first law, like in 96, it was like so much more, it allowed so much more than what has happened since.
Like you're talking about 215, like Proposition 215. Yeah, totally. I mean, that was what we refer to as the Wild West of weed.
I came at the tail end of that.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, and then since then, look at even California with like the rec law, which has like, you know, shrunk the market. Like it's like literally regulated the market into shrinking because you know, farms can't like keep up with like the harsh regulations and whatever new
or
system.
The ever changing regulations, right?
Right.
I mean, there were companies back in the day, like when I say back in the day, just a few years ago, that when legalization happened, there was this flux in laws and regulations around packaging, around, you know, different things. And those changes, I remember just they flattened a bunch of companies, just like took a bunch of companies out just because,
it was even stuff like, you know, you need like this type of bathroom like put into your facility
or you need to like lower your curb here by a half an inch.
Oh well, let's not talk about the cannabis tourism initial regs out of Humboldt County. They wanted us to like measure road widths and stuff like that. It was like insanity. It was like, but eventually that stuff all changed, and then you feel bad for the guy who like did the thing and like went through the process, and he's like, Matt, our buddy Matt out of Humboldt Tours, he went through that process, and it was not fair. It was not cool. It's just like, why are you doing this? Like overcomplication of
they
something.
They wouldn't do it to other industries. Yeah. They definitely would not.
It's like that, you know, the whole overregulation of the the industry everywhere, it leads to like total, like, this is the reason why we don't have a lot of like small business participation, because right. It's just like, you can't just like open a store. It has to be in this like really, really specific serpentine process.
Yeah.
Like really
with difficult. Like a total like catch 22 of permitting. It's like the whole thing is just like,
yeah. You got to pay taxes on your wet weed.
Yeah. All this stuff. And then it's also like, you know, county regulations and city regulations. Meanwhile, localities are, even though the state will legalize cannabis, each individual township will have to like opt in or opt out. So like even in California, something like 70% of townships don't even allow weed businesses.
Yeah, I live like, in one of those.
Yeah.
No,
it's most of the state. And it's incredible because the majority of those dispensaries exist in like 2-3 places, right? Like, the Bay Area and in LA and that, and you know, some parts, you know, north and
NorCal.
East.
NorCal.
Yeah. So it's just a little, you know, SAC, NorCal and LA. That's it.
Bum. People are surprised to hear that about California, because it's like that in Jersey, you know, like, and Massachusetts.
I read there was like 100. How many dispensaries in Jersey now? It's like over 100, right?
Because I heard there's some in Jersey City where we used to live, and I'm thinking, damn.
There's many coming, I guess, but like there's not enough producers in Jersey yet.
So this is what I keep saying, Brian. It's like to all these like growers out here who are like struggling to stay alive, I am just praying for the day that the Controlled Substances Act falls apart and they repeal that. And then, you know, interstate commerce will solve that problem and the local farmer, you know, demand it problem, you know?
Anyway.
What'd you say?
The interstate shipping thing is like the key to the whole thing. Because like, let's face facts here, like in the traditional market, it's like all California product. It's like 90% California product in like the traditional market around here.
Right.
You know, all up and down the East Coast, and probably like in most states.
And how much of it, may I add, is stolen product? How much of it?
I mean, it's all fucking, who knows? You know, you hear everything about like the California product. Like it's, you know, backdoor stuff. It's fucking fake stuff. Like, you know,
the sprayed buds.
Yeah.
Fake trap bags.
Sprayed.
Yeah, you hear like everything you can imagine. I mean, I just saw this video someone sent me yesterday about like that had this like fucking weird looking like terp vending machine thing where like you take your cannabis and put it in like this microwave type deal.
Oh God.
And
here
it comes.
Here it comes.
It's like you like type it. It's like the Coke machine, like the any kind of Coke machine where you type in what flavor you want and it like sucks the terps up through these tubes and like infuses the bud down to the tip.
This is what prohibition causes, guys. Like prohibition makes shit like this a possibility. Gross.
Exactly. I mean, like this is like just
sounds like fair food.
Yeah. I mean, like, and this is the stuff, you know, that you don't, when you, I don't know. This is why we need the interstate, because it's all California weed anyway. And it's all out
of state. It's because for, you know, forever, you know, California has a climate that can grow cannabis, you know, the way we grow it. And it's not so conducive in other parts.
So like these new states come in and like they're doing like their first run ever, like in New York, whatever. It's like or whatever.
And then that weed's got to be sold. Right. And then it goes into the hands of consumers in New Jersey for like $90 a quart or $100 a quart.
Like if it's all one big market, right. The legal market and the traditional market, like, these small companies that are just starting out growing weed, like first time in this facility, whatever. And then the actual competition at a street level is California weed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like there at least needs to be an opportunity for those dispensaries to sell that exact same product that people are actually buying and want.
I want to ask you, explain to me how it feels to be so good at explaining. I mean, you have this wide knowledge And it's like at times it's intricate understanding of how the industry works. Explain what it's like to, how do you distill that down in a strip in just a few panels? Like what's that process like for you?
It's hard sometimes because you're like, oh, I got to say this, but I have to explain this part of it too. It can be really difficult, especially like when I try to think about like who the strip is for. Like, is it for like people that already know like a lot about weed and are like in the industry anyway? Or is it for just like people that don't even know anything about weed and just like are interested because the comic, whatever. And so I try to like ride that line where I'm like constantly having to like explain like technology or just like industry jargon.
Yeah. Like how things are made in the industry. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I mean, like I stopped using the term MSO, right? Because like everybody knows it like in weed industry, but like the average person doesn't know the term MSO. Like that doesn't mean anything to like some Joe Schmo walking down the street or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I always have to be like, you know, large corporate, you know,
weed entities. Behemoth.
Yeah.
Also, like as the markets, as things go on, like there's small businesses that are technically MSOs at this point, you know, because they happen to be in like a couple states, whatever. You're in Maine and Massachusetts or like something like that. You're technically an MSO. So it's like, so it's like I'm speaking about like it refers to a specific class of like corporate cannabis group.
Yeah. Corporate like, personhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Trulieve or.
Yeah, exactly. Like
Cresco.
Yeah, Cresco, those type of.
Yeah, there's three of the top.
Yeah. Yeah, Cresco was like the first company I remember seeing in PA.
Me and they've too. Been here
this whole time. You know, it's just like, I still have not. Jersey's been legal for a while, and there hasn't been any product that's come out in New Jersey that has like made me even for a second consider driving to New Jersey to go buy
weed. Oh, I'll go get that Jersey weed.
Brutal. So yeah, New Jersey is Mids, a new podcast by Chris Gethard.
Products that are in the stores are the same as what's in the medical market in PA, which sucks. It's actually not even as good as the PA medical market.
Yeah, because that market has had time for other people to come in and people like, to be like, we want more.
Yeah, and it's crazy because like it'll be like the Curaleaf in Philadelphia and the Curaleaf in Belmar, New Jersey, which are like 20 minutes away from each other maximum. And one will be selling like the Curaleaf weed for, you know, $200 an ounce. And then over in Jersey, it's $350 an ounce or something like that, which is insane. It's 15 minutes away.
Dude, those people don't even know what they're doing. So they're in Arizona. And one of my closest and dearest friends is from Arizona. He had moved to Denver for a while to like work in making hash and working in a lab. And then he saw there was labs in Arizona. So we moved back to Arizona, started working at Curaleaf. And they're selling distillate pens and calling it live resin. And he called them out and like they got all weird and, you know, they did some like company wide training and stuff. And he ended up leaving there and working for a smaller company. But that just shows you how shady they are.
I mean, like I've heard this a lot from like growers and stuff that have gotten jobs at, you know, like a corporate cannabis company. And we're like the grower is like an experienced grower and knows a lot and comes in and it's like, we should actually be doing it like this way or whatever, but like they don't really want to hear that. It would be like going to a McDonald's and being like, we should actually cook these burgers in like a different way, and McDonald's like, no, we do it this way, like this is like the whole fucking franchise thing.
That happened to another friend of mine. And he was supposed to run some stuff and with the, I won't say the company because they're pretty big here in California. And he ended up getting paid like $100,000 just to like pretty much defoliate because they didn't want to implement any of the things he wanted to change.
Yeah, that's right. The thing. I mean, look, even working in marketing and consultative work, like, you know, how many times have I given people like paid advice that they just don't listen to?
Yeah.
Like that's a thing, but I don't think it's unique to the cannabis industry. I think it's a thing, but yeah, it's, and you know, I'm really kind of like, you know, torn a little bit because I am total Brian Box Brown fanboy, right? I have to admit I'm a total giddy fanboy. What are you working on right now? What's keeping you busy right now?
So I've been doing a lot of freelance work over the last couple of months, freelance illustration and stuff. But you know, I'm also working on a book that is like a fiction book that I'm slowly chipping away at, which looks interesting. I haven't messed around in fiction in a long time.
Are you writing words? So it's no more drawing, just words.
It's a comic.
Oh,
but it's kind of about like death, and well, it's about a technology that allows people to be like downloaded into an app that their loved ones can like communicate with like after they're dead.
Very Black Mirror-esque.
Yeah, it's kind of
that would not be so. I mean, it's weird, but it would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like
coming soon to an app store near you.
It's kind of like, you know, you're upset if your parents, you know, well, you don't want your parents to get sick and die or whatever. But like, what if they were around all the time?
Oh, I don't know. They were watching all the time. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're
posing some quite the existential questions, right? Yeah. So how's that coming along? What are you most excited about on that?
You know, chipping away at it slowly. And it's just like my, you know, side gig kind of right now and working on Legalization Nation. I mean, like, that to me is like my favorite thing to work on. I get excited. Sometimes I'll be bummed out on like Tuesday morning. I'm like, oh man, like ever pissed off or something. And then I'm like, oh, it's Tuesday. Like today's the day I post my comic. And I like get real excited because like, I'm just like, you know, get to see what everybody has to say.
Yeah. Does it feel very like a lot of people work on things in their career and, you know, it's like a long-term deliverable and then you feel like you deliver it and you feel the good vibes and the good feels of having done good work, but you get a chance to do that once a week.
Yeah, no, it is. That's like why I do it. I mean, on its face, like it doesn't like makes a little bit of money, but like only like a tiny bit. So it's kind of like almost a loss leader because it's my way to like be involved in the cannabis industry.
You're making a huge impact with that loss leader, dude. Like, I think like, you know, in many ways, most activists will pay to do activism work. Like that's what being an activist is all about. And even though you are making, you know, a little bit of a living off of it, your impact is felt globally. People are talking. You're talking to people in a way that is very accessible.
Relatable.
Relatable. You're talking to people in a way where you're very like an omniscient fly on the wall, but you know, you're not guiding them in any one direction or the other. Like you're letting
people.
And
you're a real stoner.
Yeah, you're real deal, dude. You're real deal. Like that was my next question. Like, what are you smoking on, dude?
Oh, I've actually been on all kinds of different, trying out all kinds of different shit lately. I had a big event in New York City in January. And so I got to sample a ton of the like legacy / traditional cannabis from a couple of the growers out there. It's crazy.
It's so sweet. It's fire.
Yeah. These guys are like literally this guy who I designed the label for.
Very. Oh, wow. It's super sweet.
So now do you all just get weed whenever you want from them?
They hook it up when I see them.
As they should.
But so they have fire-ass weed. And they've been growing it for like 20 years. And now they're like trying to, you know, they gave legacy operators kind of some cover a little bit to like come out of the shadows and try to get like license in New York. But it's still been a struggle for these guys. Like, it's been a couple of years now and they're still like trying to like going through that process.
You know, it's always so funny, Brian, when like I hear this from people, but it's like, I always wonder how much of this, and this is a question for you, how much of this is like, you know, legacy operators are used to operating in a certain very specific way.
It's a different kind of business.
Yeah. And then when you break open the nut of legalization, everybody's like, you know, running around with a chicken, like a chicken with their head cut off. Yeah. It's not that they're bad business people. It's that they've never done business that way.
Yeah. Too much computer work.
Oh, there is a ton of more extra shit. That's like another thing though. Why there's too much shit. There's too much.
And the rent's too damn high.
Yeah.
Much like extra
hoops,
regulatory hoops and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it's already bad enough running a small business, hard stop. You add weed to that and you're just like inundated with just bureaucracy and garbage.
If you're selling whatever pencils, like it would be, you know, a total, you know, you'd have to go through the whole like getting licensed, finding property, whatever, that whole situation. It's not easy. But then add if they had a million different regulations on how you're able to create pencils.
Your pencil packaging.
Yeah, and like everything imaginable. It's like, you know, is that necessary even? Like, I think it stems from stigma on cannabis and like
fear.
And like, yeah, and like a lot of it is, you know, there's a lot of like, what's that called? Security theater type stuff going on, you know, to
like keep, window dressing kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like to keep the people like that aren't smoking weed.
Happy, like, happy. You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that. In many ways, when I run the tours into Mendo or like I meet with a new farm or a new farmer, a lot of times, most times, and this is a good question. It's not a bad question, but I have a better answer to their question than they have a question. So a lot of times I'll get asked like, what do you plan to do to protect my farm? And I'm like, bro, you got a permit in California. You should have a security plan to protect your farm. I'm not doing anything to protect your farm. Like, you know, I'm paying you to provide a service to guests, and we're going to be as responsible and as tidy and as good stewards of your property as we can be. But like, how, like, what am I supposed to do? Like, send up helicopters and drones to prevent like people forever from like breaching your security plan? Like, dude, you got through the process. You have the plan. It should work.
You know, I mean, you got to think like it's going on a tour at this could only bring like good word of mouth and stuff to the business.
Oh, totally. And that's what we do. Like, I mean, Brian, ultimately, like, you know, in many ways, we provide educative services to the general populace who, you know, read your work and also the folks that take our tours. But at the end of the day, we're exposing two very different sides of an industry, right? The same industry, right? Like, I'm bringing people to this, I'm sharing people into the story, the storyline, this legacy of the cannabis trail up from San Francisco. Yeah.
A deeper appreciation, really.
And you're exposing kind of the antithetical, you know, force there, right? So, and I think it's such a, you know, I would have expected you when we first met, I would have thought to myself, this guy's going to do big things, right? But I never, ever, ever thought that you would have done it in the way you did it. And it's such a refreshing way to look at. Being a fanboy of your work, I look forward to it when it drops because in many ways it's like a little bit of that insider tip that I may not be connected with. And like, I learn a lot. Dude, I've been in this industry 20 some years. Like, you know, you provide me a little glimpse into things that I don't know about, and you do it in a quick, digestible, easy way. Almost, dare I say, for the social media, you know, generation, it's so easily digestible, it's so easily understandable, and it makes such an important impact on people's lives every week. And I think
it also shows that how most of us are on the same team.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and we get to connect with people all over on the on these same topics. And I think that's fucking marvelous.
You didn't answer my question, though. You have to tell. Go ahead.
I have a question. I always think that. So you've been in California like a while, right?
A little over 12, 13, almost 13 years. Yeah.
Yeah. But you come back and forth. Back to the East Coast sometimes. I always think that, like,
no, go on.
I wonder if, like, that sometimes people that are in California can't really see the rest of the industry, like, at all.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I've been with Cannabis Bar Services now, been back into those other markets, right? And I have teams in other markets, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, you know, Oregon. And, you know, you're right. Like it's easy to put the blinders on and live in California. It's easy to not look out, but I've been forced to kind of experience the way others live in their world. And look, I've hit my face on the floor pretty hard a couple times, like from a business perspective, right? Like, look, not every place is like California in many different ways. And one of those aspects for me that I found most intriguing, hindering, whatever you want to call it, is the fact that in, like, for example, like Michigan, comparatively to California, the laws in Michigan are pretty awesome and permissive. But culturally speaking, people are still in that period of like looking over their shoulder, worrying about people, worrying about the cop. It's not as open. It's not as free. It's not as talked about. It's something you've still got to be like looking across the way to see who you're talking to understand if it's going to be taboo for them or not. So it's like something that I have to be very measured and careful of when, you know, selling services in other states and regions that are cannabis centric, because people are just not as wild and loosey goosey as these crazy liberal Californians.
We are loosey goosey and we'll roll, like, up everywhere.
The market in California has shrunk a little bit. It's still like so like much bigger than many other states.
It is contracted, but yes, we are the seventh largest, you know, economy in the world. Like,
yeah. In terms of like,
it's a numbers game. Yeah.
And like everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's just like there's also California is not dominated. California has its own like huge fucking cannabis companies that are like California only, that are actually probably going to be like the companies that are national names one day, you know.
Well, that's why I think, like, right now, like, even the term MSO, if you really think about it, like, there are state operations that exist only in California that will overshadow like half of the MSOs out there.
Oh my god, definitely. Yeah. Like, even like, you know, like Steetsy or something like
Stizzy, like, yeah, those guys,
yeah, whatever, they're huge, and they're like just in California. And you know, their
product is everywhere.
Yeah, true. But I mean, you know, they're able to compete in California where Cresco can't compete, and like Curaleaf left California, like they're just like not even bothering, like they can't move any product at all.
It's a weird like New Jersey's like a weird like Stockholm syndrome weed market. It's like it beats you to death, but you still got to go back to it every time. It's just
it really is. I mean, there's certain people that will even defend it. Like there's certain like class of people I feel like that will defend stuff like that.
The NIMBYs.
Yeah, because it's so still convenient. Like and being like, oh yeah, you know, like I don't care that it's just like sucks, but like because I can just still go buy it, whatever. They're like happy about it. And I'm like, no, man, like go anywhere else. Like leave the state once. Like,
yeah. Get higher standards for yourself.
Yeah. But like, I still, every time I think about the Jersey thing, I'm like, still it's gonna get better. It's gonna get better. But like, you know, it's just like this endless baby step process. Just like so annoying to like watch go down.
Let me ask you a question about, this is going to be kind of a funny one, but I want a couple takes on some things. All right. We're going to play a little game. I'm going to say something and you're going to tell me what you think about that something. So here, microdosing cannabis, necessary move or marketing genius?
Microdosing cannabis?
Yeah. Microdosed cannabis.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that just seems like a way to sell more more weed at a higher price.
Okay.
No, less weed at a higher price.
Less weed for more.
Less weed at a higher price.
All right. Next question. Live resin. Take it or leave it.
You know, like I hadn't smoked live resin in a really long time. And I got some recently. Someone gave me some. And I just couldn't even take it compared to like rosin. Like
yeah.
Ash rosin.
Yeah. Like, well, live resin is still like ultimately distillate, no?
I'm sure there's people out there that are making like fire live resin, but like I would turn it down at this point. I'd rather smoke flower than live resin. Really.
Agreed. We'll do one more of these, Brian. All right. Last one. What New Jersey rec market? A mess or a mess forever, or the best is yet to come?
It's not going to be terrible forever. Like, there needs to be more, and this is going to happen. Like, it's just taking forever with New Jersey and like whatever. I think like Jersey real estate has a lot to do with this because like it's expensive as hell, like everywhere. Kind of.
Well, Jersey also has that similar thing California was doing with green zones, right? Like approved, arbitrarily approved, aka arbitrarily, also known as lobbied for zones where buildings are allowed to be cannabis. Facilities.
Yeah. And like that, I think that's township by township can like pick the spots, you know?
Yeah. That's some bogus BS. If you ask me, I think that's like perfect. Like that's like, you know, you want to talk about like nepotistic behavior. You want to talk about, you know, cherry picking, gerrymandering, whatever you want to call it. It's all, it's just perfect awfulness.
And it's discrimination.
It is full. Yeah. All of a sudden, because somebody draws a green line around your neighborhood, now your building can rent for six times more than like everything around it. Like that's some bullshit.
Like that, you know, if you look at like Massachusetts has had legal weed for like a lot longer than Jersey. And they're like barely kind of like just starting to kind of like have a more mature market that's like not all corporate. And like some, you know, local Massachusetts businesses like are, you know, developing a little bit, you know, and so Jersey is going to be slow like that. It's going to be, you know, we're talking, you know, maybe like 5 years from now, I could go to the dispensary that's nowhere near the beach. There's no dispensary, like all the beach towns, there's like no dispensaries in the whole county.
By design, I'm sure.
Which is obnoxious. Like
they fucking let Jersey Shore happen, but they won't let dispensaries.
You drive up this one town in Jersey, Toms River, right? Like it's like the gateway, like to like
Toms River,
and you're driving through it, and there's no dispensaries allowed, and like they like permanently banned all cannabis businesses, and like the whole street, the whole town is like one commercial drag that has like everything on it, like every liquor stores, like every fast food place, like vape shops, like dispensaries, even not dispensaries, but like head shops, even, but like no, not allowed to sell weed. So you can go and get like everything you need here for your vacation, like right before you get to the beach, except weed. You have to like bring that with you.
New Jersey, like, levels of inconvenience you never thought were possible.
Like, stronger than the storm. Remember that one, Victor?
But I hear Atlantic City is supposed to be going to be like kind of like a weed destination.
We're hearing about that. I've actually spoken to Rob Mejia at Stockton University in his class about, I've spoken to them about, you know, what I do for work and Emerald Farm Tours and everything, and had a really nice reception there with those guys. It was a nice conversation. They were really engaged.
Hey, Victor.
What was that?
How many times did you go vacation in Atlantic City when you lived out there? Because I went exactly zero times.
Dude, I've been to Atlantic City. Like, let me just put it to you this way. I've been kicked out of Atlantic City more than I've actually spent time in Atlantic City. Like, it's not, I mean, like, look, it's.
All right, so the Philly people will go to Atlantic City area.
Like, but they go to, like, Ventnor.
Yeah, they do.
See what I'm saying? Like it's nobody actually ends up on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. That's like misery.
If there were weed stores there that had,
of course,
cool shit, I would go there when I was going to the beach. You know,
but I think that's the intention, right? Like, that's what my understanding is. Like, they're trying to, you know, Sin City in New Jersey, which is Atlantic City, right? You got all the casinos and everything. They're trying to kind of push more, again, more of the whole, like, let's force this into the place where it belongs and not make it accessible to everyone. You know, it's kind of crazy. Like, you know, why does Atlantic City need to be this epicenter of cannabis lounges? Like, cannabis lounges should be in places where there's high density populations, right? Like, there's lots of people living together where, like, maybe you want to smoke with other people. Maybe you're elderly. Maybe you want to get together with your friends and, like, not smoke in your apartment. You know, like,
I always think that, like, the lounge places would be best, like, near other shit, like, as like a stop on a trip, like on your night out,
the road trip.
Well, look, you look at the dispensaries in San Francisco right now, and I'll tell you, like, I go into a lot of dispensaries often, and the ones that are doing the best are the ones with a lounge.
Yo, well, listen to this. In, like, rural Illinois, kind of near Gary, Indiana, my good friend Dredd, he's building this grow right there. And right across the street, which is part of the same thing, there's a dispensary, a casino, a bar, and a restaurant. So for his break every day, he gets to go, like, you know, roll up a joint, enjoy it in the lounge, and then buy food.
Yeah.
And it's, like, perfect. And it's like they're leaps and bounds ahead of us here in California, and it's in rural Illinois.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, Brian, we're coming on our time here soon. I gotta ask you a couple more things that I wanna get on record here. Let me just ask a very 30,000 foot question. Like, in your years writing cannabis comics and writing about and learning about cannabis and kind of talking to multiple, you know, folks in the industry and learning the way you have learned to be, you know, this foremost, you know, scholar on cannabis stuff here in this format, what has been the biggest learning moment? Like, what was the aha moment? Like, after all these years, you look back on the thing that you're most impressed about, either yourself or something you learned about the industry, but more importantly, about yourself and about how cannabis brought you to that.
Well, I think the biggest, like, aha moment I probably had was after we had, like, legal medical cannabis here, finding the cultural markets here, and, like, the places where, and talking to the people that just, like, will never buy weed at a dispensary and, like, haven't ever and have no interest in, like, it at all. Like, it's just, like, totally.
That's a thing. And that's surprising to me too, always. Yeah.
100%. But there's, like, tons of people. Like, I always think about, like, the people that would have made up, like, the Grateful Dead parking lot scene, like, that will just, like, I have the access to, like, all the best weed and, like, already, like, are consuming and enjoying way better weed than you could ever buy at the dispensaries around here. And how big that section of the market really is. I mean, and that's, like, the gold mine, right? Is to, like, that's, like, the ultimate conversion. Like, if you, those people that are, like, on the forefront of, like, the craft of the industry and, like, the best products really in the industry, like, you know, like, the people that were making hash rosin and using it, like, before, like, whatever Cresco was, you know what I'm saying? Like, these are the people that have, like, the best, that are on the forefront of, like, the culture of cannabis. And, like, I always think that, like, the best cannabis markets will be ones, and like, I won't even see a legal cannabis market that I think is good unless it, like, incorporates these people into the market. You know, in a place like Maine or something like that, where you're allowed to be a caregiver and, like, you can get your products into a dispensary pretty easily as, like, a small producer or whatever. Like, until you see stuff like that happening, and it's not like impossible for like the average Joe to get their stuff out there. There's always going to be like this separate market, like this cultural market that exists beyond the legal market.
Now, that is a great point, and I want to ask on the heels of that, is culture, cannabis culture, regardless of where it comes from, is that the new commodity here? Is that the valuable, is that the value prop on the industry now? Is it the culture?
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that I feel like a lot of, I mean, that's the thing that the corporate cannabis can never like emulate, right? Like they haven't been able to at all figure out a way to incorporate that into their product. It still feels like, you know, this like, you know, cultureless, like inauthentic, like buying weed at like an Apple store. And like it was feels like it was made by a computer or something like that too, like, so like that is the commodity. You're right, like that is a commodity right now, and like you can also see it in like the most savvy legal operators trying to co-opt that culture, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. you can see it in like the more savvy large operators. Yeah. Still like the big MSOs like just don't give a shit at all. Like they're like operating.
They don't need us.
Well, their customer, they understand their customer. Like they know.
Yeah, like their customer base is not.
Is that not that. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I don't think they, you know, the smartest among them know that they'll never, you know, get that market. But they're happy selling mids to the general populace.
Mids to the kids, but not the kids. But you know what I mean.
No, it is. It's like 30% of the weed smoking population, like the, you know, baby boomers, like, and just like casual users.
What's the most important thing you want people to take away from reading your strip?
So like one of my goals always is to just reduce stigma of cannabis and like just like this, the way we talk about cannabis. Like I don't think that it always has to be, even though it's a comic strip, people are like, it's like the least funny comic strip, right? Like it's not like funny at all, because I just think that like the way people talk about cannabis, it's like always a joke, right? Like it's always like the butt of the joke. And so like I try to take cannabis seriously and talk about it like without considering like the overall stigma of it, and how like, you know, I try never to like build upon that. Like you'll never see me talk about cannabis people being stupid or anything like that.
You have a lot of respect you have a lot of respect for it. Totally. And we see that.
I try to keep it like on the level, and like, I want people to walk away. This is like a defense mechanism, I think, for making comics, because the way people think about comics as like a childish kind of like thing. And I always thought of it as like as something that could be much more powerful than like just like a something that's there for like a joke, whatever. And so, and I think of cannabis kind of in the same way. It's people think of it as like this like goofy thing, you know, maybe because of years of representation in media or whatever, but like it's a serious thing that people use and take, some people take it seriously, and like and if we can take it seriously, we can like, you know, talk about it seriously. I think we'll see better laws, and like all of the bad laws come from stigma. They're able to get away with it because.
Yeah, agreed.
Brian, we're coming to the end of our time together, and I want to thank you so much for an incredible hour here spent learning more about you as a friend. I thought I knew Brian Box Brown. I'm learning so much more every day. Brian, there's something we do on every episode of High on Tour. When we wrap up an episode, we give our guest the High on Tour hot take of the show. You're going to get yourself 30 seconds to tell our audience, your listeners, anything you want to share with them. Now is your moment. Now is your shining chance. Go for it, Brian Box Brown.
Well, first, I'd like to tell everybody who doesn't, please check out my comic strip. You can read it on my Instagram, Fox Brown, and you can check out my Patreon also. And yeah, I don't know.
Where can they find the strip?
So yeah, you can, if you search Legalization Nation, you'll find it. And you know, you can find it on my Instagram and on my Twitter. I also post it on my Blue Sky account and LinkedIn. I've been posting it on. And also, it's distributed by King Features, the same company that distributes Popeye.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah. So it does get out a little bit to like the general population.
Well, thank you so much, Brian Brown. You are a true gentleman. You are a true hero. You are a true artist. And we love all your work. We love how you're really, really beating back the stigma and educating masses of people globally about the things that they don't hear that they should be hearing. So thank you so much for the work you do, Brian. April, as always, thank you for being a great co-host. You're the best. We'll see everybody again next time on High on Tour with Victor Pino and April Black. Yeah. Yeah. Have a nice day, everybody.